Radio.com. You're in the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
With Gene and Chris on the Paracast, today we're going to be talking a little bit later on the show with arch-skeptic, or not-so-arch-skeptic, serious-skeptic, Lance Moody, and who is a close friend of Jim Moseley, by the way, and we'll talk about his friendship with Moseley. His investigations, some of which have really brought some fascinating results that even someone who believes in the reality of certain paranormal events will find certainly interesting. Now, one thing that has gotten a lot of discussion lately is that episode of the Jesse Ventura Show. This is the one that you participated in, but most of what you did was on the cutting room floor. I know you talked about someone in last week's episode, Chris, but maybe we could get an update of where we're going on that. Because a lot of people now seem to be talking about it.
Well, again, I stand by my carefully worded statements last week about the project, at least the program about the Sherman Ranch or the Skinwalker Ranch case, seemed to have been hijacked and compromised during the process. It took many months, more than it normally would take to produce a program like that. It was sent back and forth to the network to be edited. Evidently, substantial changes were made. I was told the episode was great and some of the best work they'd ever done, and now it was merely good. And it was hinted around that, let's put it this way, that certain people were not happy about how the whole thing was handled. I've made the comment on at the forum, theparacast.com, that it was as if Bigelow had a hand, or Bigelow's people had a hand in somehow selecting and deleting certain material.
Now, you don't know personally that Bigelow was involved.
No, okay. I do not.
It's just suspicion based on the fact that parts were taken away.
It was as if he was involved, based on my direct, close, personal involvement with the actual, the whole original idea of how to approach the Sherman Ranch portion of the show, the people to contact, the types of focus. Where that focus should go. I work closely with the producers, with the director, with the researchers, associate producers on developing that part of the show. They should have broken into two shows. They should have done one on Bigelow and really dove in on that subject and then done a complete show on the ranch. They tried to, I think, bite off too much. The very fact that Robert Bigelow was pretty much ambushed on private property and was willing, for the first time, to my knowledge, to appear on network television, especially, definitely the first time where I know of that he's actually made comments publicly relating to the paranormal. I would think that they would need to get legal release form from him to use his image and his comments. The guy's a billionaire. You don't just use a billionaire's statements about a controversial subject without having some sort of understanding with that individual, and that would obviously be in writing. I don't care what some of our detractors, including today's guest, says about that. He's a television professional. He should know better than to say, oh, they didn't need a release for him. They do need a release for him to use somebody's image.
Well,
and,
I know when I've been interviewed on TV. Whether the show goes on or not, I have to sign a release.
I've been involved, Gene, somewhere in the neighborhood of 50 television projects. I have been working as a professional videographer, producing all sorts of different varied types of programming for quite a number of years. I have never done a project where a release form wasn't required by somebody who was being focused on, even people in the background. In certain instances, need to have release forms just to be shown. So the assertion by today's guest that usually a release form isn't needed, I'm sorry, that's absolutely wrong. And he should know better. He claims in a particular post that he actually, for some reason, deleted from the forums that he was a news director for 5 years and had been working in video editing, film editing for quite a number of years. So if anybody should know...
You're covering a news event.
What?
So you go to cover an event. You're not getting permissions from people. You're covering a public event. And this is something where you send your cameras out, and as long as the public is admitted, you bring your cameras in or your audio recording gear or both, and you record what's there. You don't need permission from anybody. It's a public event. But when you sit down and have someone interviewed, you want to know you have permission to do that interview.
Well, the show was about Bigelow. Come on. The guy needed to sign a release form for Jesse's production company, who he's working with, to use his image and voice. There's just no way around that, especially since the guy's a billionaire. What are you going to put yourself in legal jeopardy? You don't want to, you know, have Bigelow own your production company after a series of litigations. Anyway, the bottom line is this. If Bigelow signed a release form, you know there was a negotiation there. There would have to be, because I know how this is done. I negotiate my release forms oftentimes. So, and I'm, you know, who am I? I'm not a billionaire.
I'll tell you what, if you were, at least you can contribute to our show here. But right now you're just a poor working stiff, and most of it is getting very stiff at our age.
Yeah. Anyway, it's going to be a great show today. I'm really looking forward to it. And, you know, Lance, I don't care what Lance may think of me. I really appreciate Lance in many ways. I think he's for some unknown reason, decided to elect himself some sort of cop, you know, psy cop of our forum, and has done a great job in really doggedly doing some research. And we're going to obviously talk about that. And he does have a very, you know, rational, very objective, very conservative view about paranormal subjects. And he is a valued participant, as I mentioned, on our forums, for the forums. But, Gene, I think he sets a record.
Yes, the first guest on the show who's been banned twice. Can you dig it? Have we ever had even a guest who has been banned? No, we have not. No, of course, we've had guests who were later banned, such as He Who Shall Not Be Named, who, of course, was a follower of a certain one-armed person from Europe, a contactee. He was on the Paracast twice. He participated in our forums, and then we just had enough of him. I have had enough of you, like William Shatner said in Star Trek III, The Search for Spock, when he was talking to Christopher Lloyd, who played as Klingon. Don't ask about that. But we decided we had enough of He Who Shall Not Be Named, and therefore we banned him. He's gone. He's history. I haven't been banned, by the way, but I should tell you that actually a former co-host of the show had me ban him a few times.
He banned himself, actually.
There you go. Oh, wow. This will be fun. This will be fun. And by the way, just to let you listeners know, we also have been looking into a very lengthy review at Amazon Books of the two books Missing 411 from David Politis. And there are some questions. Possibly legitimate questions. Number one, about his background. Number two, about the extent of his research. And rather than talk about it here, because we're talking about pages of material with pages of references, and I've never seen such a long review at Amazon. Normally, a review at Amazon is a couple of paragraphs or maybe a page or so. This goes on for pages and pages. Yeah. And this guy's not very impressed with David's book. All I'm going to say is you got to listen to both sides and see what happens. But without having read the thing thoroughly, because, you know, I have a life also, I have to say that there are questions David Politis has to answer with regard to his research into the mysterious case of missing people. Doesn't mean his research is wrong. Nobody's perfect. But let's see where that goes, and we're going to take it in future episodes. Meantime, on this week's episode, we have our favorite skeptic on the Paracast forums at forum.thepowercast.com. He's Lance Moody. He's been active for a number of years in the skeptical movement, and we're going to find out why. We're going to find out about his research, and we've got a lot of questions from you listeners to ask of Lance, and we'll see where that takes us. And I rather suspect he may be back for a sequel. With Gene and Chris, you're in
the Paracast.
Neighbors, let's talk body language. You know, when meeting in person, we express so much through the raise of an eyebrow, a nod of agreement. These simple gestures help us communicate more effectively and get positive things done. That's why I recommend GoToMeeting with HD Faces. You can meet face-to-face with colleagues and clients no matter where they are. GoToMeeting takes simple online meetings a big step forward with the highest quality HD video conferencing. Share how GoToMeeting allows you to easily collaborate with your team. Try GoToMeeting free for 30 days. Don't wait for this special offer. Visit GoToMeeting.com, click the Try It Free button, and use the promo code PODCAST. Remember once again, neighbors, use the promo code PODCAST. Try GoToMeeting. Visit GoToMeeting.com and click the Try It Free button. Use the promo code PODCAST.
Quantitative easing, unemployment at depression levels, Europe financial system falling apart, China getting out of U.S. treasuries. At the end of 2008, the time of TARP, the national debt was at $11 trillion, gold trading around $850 per ounce. Close to 2012, the national debt exceeded $16.4 trillion, gold doubled to $1,600 per ounce. The $20 trillion threshold for the national debt is inevitable. Politicians in Washington have a ferocious appetite for spending and stimulus. What's worse, a printing press to finance. 100 years ago, we had a gold standard to limit this madness, but now you have to adopt your own gold standard. Don't be fooled with paper promises. Get Midas Resources 10 Reasons to Buy Gold free by calling 800-686-2237. Understanding the gold and silver market may be the only insurance you could have to avoiding the next economic crisis. Call 1-800-686-2237 and order your free copy. Again, that's 800-686-2237.
What's better than Mountain House freeze-dried food? Buckets of Mountain House freeze-dried food. Now the freeze-dried guy introduces convenient, easy-to-store Mountain House survival buckets filled with our top-selling items. Each item is sealed in a Mylar-type pouch, and each pouch is neatly packed in clear buckets so you can easily see the contents inside. These Mountain House survival buckets come with well over a 25-year shelf life and are perfect for emergency preparedness, camping, backpacking, or at-home use. Go to freezedryguy.com, click on freeze-dried foods, and choose our 12-month, 6-month, 3-month, 1-month, or 7-day Mountain House Survival Bucket with 32 generous servings starting at just $69.95. And all orders to the lower 48 ship free. Call 866-404-3663 or go to freezedryguy.com. That's 866-404-3663 or go to freezedryguy.com. 100% veteran owned. The Freeze Dry Guy.
You know what happens to your digestive health around the holidays? Right. Unusual schedules and foods you don't normally eat can cause upset stomach and indigestion. But you can prepare your digestive tract with Pro-EM-1 Probiotic Cleanse from Terraganics.com. Pro-EM-1 is all natural and made with certified organic ingredients. It contains no genetically modified ingredients or preservatives and has no animal products, wheat, soy, dairy, or gluten. Pro-EM-1 does not require refrigeration, so you can take it with you, over the river and through the woods to Grandma's house. Pro-EM-1 supports a healthy, regular digestive system, supports weight loss, and improves absorption of food nutrients. Improve your digestion and keep off those extra pounds with Pro-EM-1 Probiotic Cleanse. Call or click Terraganics.com, spelled TerraGanix.com. Toll free, 866-369-3678. That's 866-369-3678. Terraganics. Life's getting better.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
He's here, Lance Moody, joining us on the Paracast with Gene Steinberg and Chris O'Brien. And he tells us here that he's scared to death of us, right?
Well, I'm a little nervous. I haven't ever done an interview like this on the radio, at least a long one. I've called in to talk shows before. I called in and spoke with Don Ecker once, and I enjoyed that. Cool. But it's not something I do regularly, and I sure as hell don't know how we're going to do 2 hours, but let's try.
Well, I'll tell you what happens here is if we run out of things for you to say, Chris and I will fill in.
Oh, good. Talk a lot.
Okay.
Yeah, talk amongst yourselves.
Something like that. And Chris and I will just have arguments and debates with each other, and you can laugh or something like that.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, one of the things I wanted to mention early on, Lance, is that you were friends with Jim Moseley. And one of the things I said when we had our Jim Moseley memorial show a couple of weeks back is that Jim had a wide net of friends. He was friends with believers like Howard Menger, the contactee. He was friends with the people in the middle, like me or Chris. Friends with skeptics like you, like Phil Klass, even Donald Menzel.
I think he was friends with Tim Printy as well.
Sure.
They spoke regularly.
And early on, Jim was pretty friendly with the amazing Randy, James Randi.
Yes, yes.
But they had a falling out, which is complicated. But I know when Randy replaced Long John Nebel, when Long John went from WOR to WNBC in the early days of that particular show, Randy replaced him for about a year before he was fired, and Jim switched over and went on Randy's show, and they were pretty friendly. And later on, when I got into radio broadcasting, because Randy was kind of an amateur astronomer, I did an interview with him. I interviewed him in New York for one of my radio shows. So it was very interesting. Then later on, of course, he got involved in skeptics and everything. But as someone who's in the skeptical position here, tell us what you knew about Jim Moseley. I know there's an interview online that you recorded with him that's really fascinating.
Yeah, I met him, I guess that was 2003, if I'm not mistaken. We met at the site of the Mothman stories. I think there was a festival going on over there. I drove over, and at the time I was thinking I was going to do this documentary about Otis Carr. And Jim didn't know really anything about Otis Carr, but he was a regular on the Long John Nebel show. So I had gotten very interested in the Long John Nebel show and started to collect episodes of that. And I talked to a lot of the people that were involved with the show. And I had known Jim really probably since the early 90s, right before I really became like a hardcore skeptic. I subscribed to Saucer Smear and started talking to him on the phone. I enjoyed that. And then all through that time period from the early 90s all the way up to his death, I think I spoke with him maybe a week or two before he died. We would speak, once a month or so, sometimes a few times in a row. And then other times there maybe a little bit more time would go by. But I definitely spoke with him quite a few times and many, many hours of enjoyment listening to him and having him tell me the stories and tell me about the old personalities, many of whom have been forgotten now, and tell me about the Long John Nebel show, his days in New York, and the crazy people that he's known. I think that I don't think many of your listeners can say this, but I listened to the very first Paracast when it came out. I mean, right when it came out. And because Jim had told me that he was going to be on the show, and I sought it out. I don't remember if you were on Apple iTunes feed at the time.
Yes, we were. From day one.
Yeah. And so I heard the show right when it came out. So I've been a listener since the beginning. And of course, I enjoyed the show. I enjoyed all the shows that Jim was on. And I've enjoyed many of the shows. I mean, there's a lot of exciting shows. I have my favorites. The show you guys did with Stephen Bassett, that's probably one of my favorites.
That's the one where he got a little bit ornery.
He essentially showed his true colors, yeah.
You saw his ornery side. And, of course, when we did a couple of interviews with Stephen Greer, one time he was really angry, you could tell.
That yeah, he was.
Getting under his skin, which was good. Not that we asked him a very hard question either. It's kind of you express a degree of skepticism suddenly, he went off.
He jumped all over you.
Yeah, he kind of really ready to just go off the deep end right there. Didn't happen.
Well, I know that that you and David have split ways as well. You had your own falling out, but he certainly brought like a sense of excitement to some of those early shows because you really didn't know where they were going to go.
I don't want to get into the discussions of the split up, but very much amicable. I know there are some issues later on, but he sent me a letter saying that the presence on the Paracast was hurting his, as they say, civilian career, and they couldn't do it anymore. And let's just leave it at that because that is, as far as I'm concerned, the official explanation. There may have been some other concerns you voiced later on, but I'd rather not get into it. The key is here is that you've been a listener to the show for a long time. You've also been a very regular participant, between being banned a couple of times, a regular participant in the PowerCast forums. Why did we ban you, by the way?
Gosh, I think they – who does?
You're the only guest that's ever been on that's been banned, not only once, but by both of us.
Well, I very well may be banned any time now. You know, you just never know. It's I think David banned me the first time because I said something, you know, that he didn't like. But, you know, I like David and I like Eugene. I wanted to mention also, I thought of some of the things that I could say in the 5 minutes that I thought I could fill. I remember that I met you actually just online well before anything to do with the paranormal. I was an early user of, I don't know if it was called America Online then or if it was had another name related to Apple.
I'll give you the history. You want to hear the history? The history is that Apple was going to have something called Apple Links Personal Edition. Apple had this service called Apple Links, an online service in the 80s designed mostly for dealers and developers. And they hooked up with a company called Quantum Computer Services, run by a guy named Steve Case. And this was going to be a new version of it called Apple Links Personal Edition. And for some reason, they had a falling out or something. So Quantum came up with America Online, later renamed AOL. And I became one of the first charter members in 1989. And later on, they actually gave me a job, a paid forum manager.
Well, I think it was in that capacity that you must have answered a question I had or something like that, because I remembered the name and I remembered your distinctive salutation, peace. And
that's very hard to use these days.
It's very hard to believe in, yeah.
Right. Well, I don't remember.
No. I'm sure you wouldn't. I'm sure I was just one of many, many people that you helped, but that was my first contact with Gene Steinberg.
Well, you know, I've helped a lot of people over the years. I even helped Tom Clancy, famous author, and met him years later at one of those Macworld expos. I haven't heard from him in many years, and maybe he decided he hated me. I wasn't quite as right-wing as he was, or is. I don't know, but I have not heard from him in over a decade. But I did help him with his CD-ROM and a few other issues, so that was fascinating. I don't know how we started America Online and Tom Clancy and Lance Moody, but you're with Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN. Great talk radio starts here.
If you want to get your website online and you need reliable service, first-class service at the lowest possible price, there's only one place to go. Well, DreamHost has a special promotion with our show where they'll offer you unlimited disk space, unlimited bandwidth, one-click web apps such as WordPress, 24/7 support. You can save over $55. You want to know how? Go to DreamHost.com/radio, DreamHost.com/radio. Magazine provides true reports of the strange and unknown. Keep up with the latest on angels and miracles, psychic phenomena, ghosts, UFOs, life after death, and much, much more. To receive your free issue of Fate Magazine, call now at 1-800-728-2730 or visit their website at www.fatemag.com. That's 1-800-728-2730. What are you waiting for? Your fate awaits.
If you owe the IRS back taxes, listen carefully. Sweeping changes to IRS policies will help more people than ever eliminate their tax debts once and for all. And now, thanks to Dan Pilla, you can get the tax help you need to end your tax nightmare.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. I've helped thousands of people reduce or eliminate tax debts they couldn't pay. And after more than 30 years of experience dealing with the IRS, I can tell you there's no such thing as a hopeless tax case. With the IRS's new policies, it's easier than ever to put your tax debt behind you once and for all. Call now at 800-346-6829 to learn how I can help you. You know your IRS debt will not go away by itself, but you don't have to live in fear anymore. Call 800-346-6829. Learn how I can help you eliminate wage and bank levies, release tax liens, and negotiate a settlement with the IRS that will put your tax nightmare behind you forever. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to my website, taxhelponline.com. That's taxhelponline.com.
Food storage? Check. Survival tools? Check. Weapons and water filters? Check. But what about a permanent source of cooking power that can run forever without buying fuel or paying for maintenance? Introducing Afterburner Stoves, home of the original patented rocket stove, the Kelly Kettle, and the Solo Stove. Afterburner Stoves has what you need and now offers all GCN listeners our complete preparedness package with the means to cook meals and sanitize water. Whether you dig in or bug out, cook almost any meal with just a handful of sticks. We already have the lowest online prices guaranteed, but if you enter coupon code GCN at checkout, we'll knock off an additional 15% and send you our amazing 6-hour solar rechargeable light bulb absolutely free, all for only $249. Visit afterburnerstoves.com or call 866-716-5214. 866-716-5214. Afterburnerstoves.com. Cook hot meals with just a handful of sticks.
Weakened by GMOs, stressed out about money, and blasted by the electric environment. Hi, I'm Pastor Jenny, and that was the state I was in back in 2010. Then I learned about RNA drops. I learned that 97% of my DNA that scientists have called junk is actually packed with millions of gene switches that play a critical role in controlling how my cells, organs, and other tissues behave. I learned I don't have to put up with disease, decay, or decline like I'd been conditioned to believe. I began taking RNA drops, a 100% natural formula designed to turn on those switches and provide me with amazing health and joy. Learn more about RNA drops and order a free sample today. Visit rnafreesample.com. That's rnafreesample.com. Or call toll-free 888-577-3703. Pay only shipping and handling for a free 30-day supply of RNA drops. Get the information you need and the health you want at rnafreesample.com.
Hi, this is Don Ecker, and you are tuned in to the Paracast. Let me tell you what, you're going to hear stuff here that you probably won't hear anywhere else. Hear that, George Snorri?
Lance Moody joins Gene and Chris on the Paracast, and we're kind of just getting acquainted with him here. I think one question I'm going to ask you before we get further into the realm of the paranormal and everything, that is, you're a skeptic. And being a skeptic, why bother with this field? Just leave it to the lunatics, if that's what you think we are. Why are you involved in this at all?
I get that question a lot. I don't know. It's a little bit of a hobby. You know, it's something I'm interested in. I was very, very interested in sort of the sociological aspect of the thing, very much like Jim Moseley was, interested in the characters and the people. But additionally, you know, I guess I enjoy talking about science, about what I perceive science to be. I'm certainly not a scientist, but I like the scientific method. I believe in it. In general, I became a skeptic because there are things like faith healers and fortune tellers and people like that that prey on poor people who are at their lowest point, people who've lost a child, and a psychic comes along and pretends that they can locate the child like Sylvia Brown does. And those kind of things I felt a compunction to try to fight against. UFOs are, for the most part, pretty harmless. But it became one of my interests. I think a lot of the interest came when I started working on that documentary, when I was trying to research that I became fascinated.
Now, you're researching someone named Otis T. Carr, who was going to build some kind of free energy machine?
Yeah, Otis Carr was a sort of a never-do-well from New York. He lived in New York. He worked as a bellboy, actually, there. And he claimed...
I guess this is training. If you want to build a free energy machine, you should try working as a bellboy because you need a lot of energy.
Well, he did pretty well. He did convince a lot of people that he had gotten the secret to building free energy machines from Nikola Tesla. And supposedly the story is that Tesla, you know, lived in a hotel there, the same hotel that Carr worked in, supposedly, that Carr would listen to Tesla as Tesla gave him secrets that he'd given no one else, secrets of free energy.
He would give this to the bellboy.
To the bellboy. As Carr told the story, he would get, you know, he would go and get feed for the pigeons that Tesla loved. Pigeon keeping was something that Tesla was apparently into, doves and pigeons. He would feed them from his hotel room and keep them in his hotel room, apparently, which I think, as I understand it, led to him having to leave one of his hotels. But, yeah, so Carr, basically, his idea was that he had the secret to building a free energy device, and he was trying to sell this thing called a circular foil craft, which was essentially a flying saucer. He got involved with a guy named Norman Colton, and I'm doing this all from memory, so I may get some of this wrong, but I think I remember it mostly.
We'll ask you questions later.
Yeah, he got involved with a guy named Norman Colton who put sort of a veneer of marketing on top of this effort. And that's when things started to take off. They made a company, Otis T. Carr Enterprises, and they began to sell shares, not necessarily legally selling shares, but they began to sell shares to the company and began speaking all over the place. And this was late 50s. It was during the time when there were tons of these UFO clubs all across the country. And these UFO clubs were typically composed of two kinds of types of people. It's similar to the way the UFO movement is nowadays, where there are very metaphysical types, and then there's these nuts and bolts types. All of them would come together in these clubs, and Carr would go around the country speaking and gathering money for this flying saucer.
Kind of sounds like Stephen Greer.
Yeah, except for Carr actually had a real flying saucer. I'm not saying it flew, but he really did have one built.
Lance, you may not believe this, but one of his protégés, Ralph Ring, happened to stop by my house today. Well, funny irony there.
Well, I know Ralph Ring. I thought Ralph Ring was in Las Vegas. Is that is he?
I believe he is. He was doing a trip here. There's a case that I'm being brought in on, kind of reluctantly, involving a woman with hundreds of hours of videos and still photographs of craft over Prescott, which is not quite passing muster, my initial appraisal of this. But anyway, I just wanted to mention that because Ralph Ring, of course, has carried the banner of Otis T. Carr and how important he was and stuff forward into the 21st century. And I just thought it's just ironic that Carr's, one of his main protégés should have stopped by my house today.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Mr. Ring was extremely helpful to me, a very, very nice man. And I found him probably getting 97, 98, something like that, well before any of the other people who interviewed him. And I think maybe this might get to some of the gist of what I think you guys wanted to talk about as far as skeptics go, is that, you know, I interviewed Ralph. I talked to him. He was extremely nice to me. I have nothing bad to say about Ralph Ring. He sent me some excellent material. But the story he told me back then is quite a bit different than the story that he told, for instance, the Project Camelot people. And this is something that I encountered over and over again. Suddenly, Ralph's story, it began to focus more on Ralph. Ralph became the center, more of the center of the focus of Otis Carr than he was when I talked to him. And I found that, you know, I talked to so many different people. I probably talked to every living person who was somehow involved with Otis Carr. I talked, for instance, to Howard Menger. Howard Menger put himself in the center of things somehow or another. He decided that he was the focus of Carr, even though I'm not even sure if Carr really knew Menger other than he attended that famous conference that Menger had there in New Jersey.
Well, you know, it's a curious thing here. Jim Moseley and I became somewhat acquainted with Howard Menger back in the mid to late 60s, where we had lunch with Menger at this diner across from 303 Fifth Avenue in New York City. And Menger was saying, you know what, maybe I didn't meet Venusians or Saturnians or whatever alien beings he claimed to have met. Maybe I was the victim of some sort of government experiment. But later on, he seemed to have retreated from that, and then he got to wanting to build his own flying saucers. But I wasn't aware of the connection directly with Otis T. Carr, except for wanting to build something or other.
I could not find any connection between Menger and Carr. I never actually found one, but when I spoke to Menger, he had his own connection that involved the FBI and things that I knew weren't correct as far as the time goes and the cities he was talking about. But he put himself in the center of the story. And that's similar to what I feel like Ralph Ring did with when I talked to him to when he later became interviewed by other people, is that his story became bigger. It became the things he did became bigger. And, you know, I think he might have been only perhaps 19 or something like that when all this was going on. But, again, I'm not going to say anything negative about Mr. Ring other than, you know, I don't think that the story he told me is the same story that he's telling now.
Interesting. Well, Kerry Cassidy has that that uncanny ability to pull all sorts of stuff out of people. I'm telling you, I don't care how much of a true believer you are. Once you stoop to the level of some of the things that are presented on that particular site, you have really suspended your disbelief. When I found out that Richard Dolan was going to do an interview and have it placed there, you know, I emailed him and said, "Rich, man, really think about this seriously." And he says, "Well, I don't care. It'll sell some books." You know, so I'm like, "Okay, yeah. Well, whatever." But, man, I'll tell you, when it comes to many aspects of this field, it's quite embarrassing to be associated with it in any way. And it is unfortunate that this is an unregulated amateur field of study. Anybody can put up a shingle and claim to be an expert. This whole field is running rampant with unfounded theories, compounded by interpretations of unfounded theories, and
which are themselves, of course, unfounded. But we could continue this unfounded rap to the end of time, and we won't. But we're never unfounded because we're Gene and Chris, and you're in
the Paracast.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
We also have swag. You know, we have all these exclusive Paracast things that you can buy. We've got like, I guess, 60 or so different items. And entails t-shirts, sleeves for notebook computers, iPad cases, mouse pads, the Paracast Jumbo Tote Bag, all sorts of t-shirts and jackets and stuff like that for men and women. We have a Paracast aluminum water bottle. All this stuff, you go to store.theparacast.com, store.theparacast.com. What makes it special is that the items are the best quality, you know, great t-shirts, fabrics, and they have our official logo on them. That's what makes them special, in multiple sizes and colors. We even have stuff for children, stuff for women, stuff for men. We have all sorts of sizes, like small up to X large. A lot of good stuff. That's the swag from the Paracast. If you go to store.theparacast.com, stop by and take a shopping tour.
In the U.S., one in every 50 homes will have a break-in this year. Burglars call it smash and grab. Police call it robbery. We call it avoidable. We are Fake TV, a simple electronic device that can fool even professional burglars. Fake TV easily plugs into any outlet and simulates the changing colors of a television. To a burglar, it looks like someone must be home watching TV, so they'll likely move on to an easier target. At only $34.95, Fake TV costs less than a month of most alarm monitoring plans and makes a great Christmas gift, or it's perfect if you're traveling over the holidays. Order your Fake TV by calling 877-5-FAKE-TV or go to faketv.com. That's 877-532-5388 or faketv.com. Fake TV, the burglar deterrent.
Check out StunGunMice.com. They specialize in home and business security, family safety, and personal protection. At StunGunMice.com, they have everything from mace pepper sprayers to cell phone stun guns and everything in between. Visit www.StunGunMice.com for all your security needs. We even ship your products the very next day. That's www.StunGunMice.com for real spy gear, real security, and awesome gadgets.
Where in the world can you find a working replica of Da Vinci's catapult design, an inflatable sumo wrestler's costume, or a watch that tells time backwards? At DaftGadgets.com, you'll find all sorts of fun, retro, remote control, and even outrageous items that probably can't be found anywhere else. If your idea of the perfect gift is a horse head pillow or a mankini, hurry on over to DaftGadgets.com. That's DaftGadgets.com.
Millions of people are going to get sick this winter from colds, flu, and other illnesses. Don't be one of them. Protect yourself with Supernatural Silver, a revolutionary new broad-spectrum antibacterial solution. Recent advances in silver technology have resulted in a silver solution that can be used daily to prevent bacteria, viruses, mold, and food poisoning, and help improve wound healing. Supernatural Silver is safe enough to consume every day, while powerful enough to destroy the causes of many serious diseases, such as strep, staph, pneumonia, colds, flus, and other harmful pathogens. This new technology has the ability to terminate entire colonies of harmful bacteria at several hundred times the effectiveness of colloidal or ionic silver solutions. The Science Digest Journal says silver is our mightiest germ fighter. It is virtually non-toxic and is emerging as a wonder of modern medicine. Go to SupernaturalSilver.com today and use the promo code SILVER2012 for 20% off. That's SupernaturalSilver.com and like us on Facebook.
Hi, my name is Richard Dolan. You're listening to the Paracast.
Moving along with Lance Moody, skeptic, joining Gene and Chris on the Paracast. In a sense, we're skeptics too, but our skepticism may not be near as severe as Lance. Lance, you've been involved.
I have a bad case of it, yes.
Okay, well, I understand there's a cure. Maybe you stick some antidepressants in your bottle of water there, you'll...
No, I think just one good anal probing would change his mind, as it would a lot of people. James Randi would come to mind. See, Penn from Penn and Teller. Teller would run away. They couldn't catch him. But anyway, I'm sorry, I digress.
I'm going to ask you, Lance, how did you first become interested and active in the skeptical movement? Because you've been doing this for a while.
Well, the thing I remember the most is that there was a guy, a local guy named Pat Packard, who was a UFO researcher. And there was also a researcher here in Cincinnati named Kenny Young. And both those guys, I somehow got to where I met them and we talked with each other. I think I went on their little, they had like a public access show. And I went on that briefly with them, and we talked a lot about UFOs, and I had by that time really become a skeptic. And Packard was a good friend with Kevin Randall. He talked to Kevin Randall all the time. He was very interested in the Roswell case. And this was right around the time that Randall's second book had come out, which was, I can't remember the name of it, UFO Crash at Roswell or something like that. Or maybe it's The Truth About the UFO Crash at Roswell. I got the book. Kevin Randall came to town. He did a lecture. I went to the lecture. I bought his book. I have a signed copy of his book. And, you know, I started reading his book. And just in the first couple of pages, he talks about the night of the supposed Roswell crash. He talks about in the sky that some nuns that were in the Roswell area, some Franciscan nuns, if I remember correctly, were looking out the window, and they saw what appeared to be a disabled aircraft of some kind in the sky, and that they made a note about it in their diary. Kevin Randall, in his book, you know, his book's full of a lot of UFO books are full of footnotes and stuff to make them look very scientific. So he had a footnote there as though he had, the footnote said something like the diaries of the Franciscan nuns held at so-and-so or something like that. You know, it made it sound as though he had seen the actual diary. But I was wondering, why did he paraphrase the entry? Why didn't he give us exactly what the entry said instead of paraphrasing, which is how he presented it? And I asked Pat Packard about that, and he was supposed to ask Kevin. He told me he asked Kevin. He never really got an answer. And, you know, it was just, I think, finally just within the past couple of months that Kevin finally admitted that he had never actually seen the diary, that someone had told him that they had seen the diary somehow. Someone contemporaneously told him that 40 years ago they'd seen the diary, and this is what it said. And he accepted that instead of actually seeing the thing. But he definitely cited it as though he had actually seen it. That was the first step that led me down this idea of you know, looking into things that can actually be checked out, because that was something that you could check out.
Let me ask you a question before you go on. Did he explain why he was somewhat misleading on that particular segment of his book?
He essentially, in one of his columns at his blog, he essentially apologizes for it and admits that it wasn't done properly. But I had been badgering him about it for, you know, although these many years. And he finally admitted it. It's hard to, sometimes it's hard to get people to admit when they made mistakes. But I appreciate the fact that he did. And you know, it's one of those things where it made me think, well, gosh, you know, all these things look like they look all scientific and everything, but maybe they aren't. Maybe everybody's making things up, you know?
Just from one mistake, you assume everyone's making things up?
No, believe me, after that, there were many more mistakes along the lines that I found. But that was you asked me about the first one that I came across, what kind of got me started. And that's one of the earliest things I remember looking into.
Well Lance, let me cut in here. You and I go back online now 3 or 4 years. We've had some contentious moments.
Yes.
You are a crack researcher. Have you checked into my research? What have you found?
You mean if I looked into your actual...
Yeah. No. Have you actually made some phone calls, looked up some of the references, checked quotes with witnesses, that sort of thing, on any of my work? Have you done any sort of digging? I'd be very interested, first of all, to know if you had, and be very surprised if you were able to find anything.
No, I don't believe I have. You know, I don't really know what your work is. I know it has to do with cattle mutilations in some form, was one thing I know about, but I've never looked into that. I did, for instance, you know, I'll give you an example that you may well know from the boards, was when we were talking about crystal skulls, right? And there was a certain skull being talked about. I think maybe you had talked about it. And I'm of the belief, and I think most archaeologists are of the belief, that all these crystal skulls are modern, modern artifacts. They're not
all
ancient.
The crystal skulls. Thousands have been found, most of them small.
All the ones that you hear about, you know, the ones that have names that people invite you over to sit with and get.
Max, Mitchell Hedges, the British skull, the Smithsonian skull, this new one, Einstein, which is quite fascinating. That's here. It's about 35 pounds, I think. It's a really large and very, very rough looking.
Yeah, what I was going to say was just that we were talking about this one skull. I don't even remember the name of it, but I had mentioned that I thought this was probably a modern one, as I recall. And you posted something that you'd copied from somewhere else, right? I'm not blaming you for that, but I'm saying that's where it came from, that said, no, this one had been tested by, unlike some of these other skulls that had been found to be of modern origin, this one had been tested and was at the same time at the British Museum. And it is definitely authentic. This was the text that you'd pasted. So I called and talked to the lady that was actually there when they were doing the testing, and she told me in no uncertain terms, I think you remember this, that...
Oh, yeah, this definitely rings a bell. And as it turns out, I did some digging on my own, and I confirmed what you came up with, and you know, I really appreciated that, actually, because it set me straight. Anytime someone can set me straight, I appreciate that.
And you know that little bit of text is on site after site. That same exact text, that same exact wrong text gets repeated at believer site after believer site, such that, you know, the whole thing is sort of self-perpetuating. It doesn't matter if anything's real or not real. It's just, I think people, and I got a sense of this from some of the questions that were asked. It's like on the forums, the ones that were being posed towards me, it's like people want their entertainment. They don't want anyone to take away what they find entertaining. And I understand that, you know, but if you want to talk about these things as being real or not real or factual or not factual, then I'm game for that.
Let me ask you a fast question here. The assumption or the report that there had been a determination that this was something really old, carbon dating, whatever technique they use.
Right.
Did someone just make that up or was someone just simply mistaken?
Well, the lady, I don't even remember her name now, but the lady that I spoke with was she's an archaeologist, a famous doctor here in the States, but she happened to be there at the British Museum when they were doing these examinations, and she guessed that someone had just made it up. Yeah, that they just totally, it came from, Chris may know more about this than I do, but the idea that that particular skull was somehow ancient is just totally false.
Yeah, and I totally agree. I've done quite a bit of work researching this whole crystal skull phenomenon. And listeners, you must understand there are countless examples of archaeologists actually legitimately finding crystal skulls, but none of them have been these large three-quarters
right.
life-size versions. There has been hundreds, probably, of crystal skulls discovered, the size of the fist even. These are very, very difficult objects, obviously, to create. And chances are the larger the skull, the more symmetrical it is, chances are that it was manufactured somehow. The Mitchell Hedges skull, of course, would be the most famous example with the movable jaw. That
right.
was probably, I think, made in the mid to late 1850s in a particular town in Germany that was known for their ability to carve quartz. But, again, this gets into this whole realm, and I think we really should talk about this, Gene and Lance. This whole need for people to believe. I mean, when you were a kid, for instance, did you believe in Santa Claus?
Yes.
Did you believe in the Easter Bunny?
I don't remember believing
that,
in Easter
that's
Bunny.
That's a little tougher, huh?
I remember
are
the guy. I remember
are you
the guy.
A Christian?
I'm not, no.
Okay, so do you consider yourself an atheist or agnostic? Are you spiritual? I don't mean to pry here. I'm just trying to get a sense of Lance Moody.
And we're going to have him answer that question in our next segment. We'll leave the great cliffhanger of his religious beliefs or lack thereof with Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio?
Something more important.
Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. If you'd like to listen to GCN programs on the go, I have great news. GCN has created a Droid and iPhone application, and it's free. Just as easy as going to GCNlive.com, click on the banner, and download. Before you know it, you'll be listening to your favorite hard-hitting GCN shows, live or on demand, right on your Droid or iPhone, 24/7 and on the go. So download the Droid and iPhone app free by clicking on the banner at GCNlive.com. Thanks again for listening to GCNlive.com. Again, that's GCNlive.com.
We the people grow cotton, weave fabric, engrave ink, embed strips and fibers to protect from counterfeit and carting to a private bank, having it lent back at interest, forcing taxes to service debt. This capitalism, or was Jefferson correct when stating a central bank issuing the public currency is a greater menace to the liberties of the people than a standing army? Ted Anderson, I'm placing a free silver dollar in a book that explains our monetary system. Call for your copy, 800-686-2237. It's time to understand the system. Call 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.
What do you do when your propane runs out and you don't have a large amount of wood for cooking? That's when you need a Grover Rocket Stove from StockStorage.com. The Grover Rocket Stove starts easily with any combustible material, like junk mail, small twigs, leaves, weeds, or dry sagebrush. Then just add a small amount of kindling wood and you'll be cooking entire meals in minutes. Grover Rocket Stoves are made right here in the USA and are built to last a lifetime using heavy-duty thick-gauge steel and are painted with high-temp paint to withstand heat. Go to StockStorage.com and see three great Grover Rocket Stoves, stainless steel, heavy duty, or our original Grover Rocket Stove for only $135 and get free shipping to the lower 48. For phone orders, call 801-361-6984 or go to StockStorage.com. That's 801-361-6984 or StockStorage.com. The original Grover Rocket Stove minimal wood use cooking stoves, available exclusively from StockStorage.com.